This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Time for our weekly conversation about longleaf politics. Here to chat are Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hello.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
We now know the candidates for congressional and legislative elections as the filing period came to a close Wednesday. All 170 legislative races will have contenders from both major parties, and each U.S. House incumbent will have challengers. While there are more competitors, many seats are unlikely to be any more competitive. And with no presidential, governor, or U.S. Senate races this fall, turnout may in fact be low. What is your most significant takeaway from the filing period, Rob?
I think, again, it's Donald Trump. Donald Trump affects all politics in modern America in 2018. I think the reason that we have competition in every district is directly traceable to Trump. It's traceable to the fact that people have been mobilized and energized to engage in politics. They want to be a part of the process. They've even gone to the extent where they even to run in seats where it is unlikely that a Democrat or a Republican could win because they feel that it's so important, even to make candidates who are almost shoo-ins to win, that they at least are going to have to spend some money and make some effort. I think that's good. It's also, however, a long way to go. We still don't have fair districts. We still don't have competitive districts because of gerrymandering. So it's a hopeful, incremental, positive sign. It's attributable to Trump, but we have a long way to go.
My biggest takeaway is we've just had filing. We have a primary election in May and then, of course, the general election in November. So we'll know who the winners are along that. But at the end of filing, Jeff, I would say that the winners are the voters of North Carolina and the people that are paying attention to this. For the first time, I think ever, I mean, at least since 1925, we know since they've been keeping those records, mm-hmm. we have a Republican and a Democrat candidate in every single legislative race. In the marketplace of ideas, this is hugely significant. You know, even in non-competitive districts, we're going to have an exchange of ideas. There's going to be a Republican and Democrat talking about what they believe are the key issues in their districts, going to their voters. I think this is huge for North Carolinians and for voters. At least we have a choice, and we'll be hearing incumbents are going to have to defend their records. New folks are going to have to lay out what their ideas are, and I think we're all winners in this.
At the heart of the races this year is whether or not Republicans can defend supermajorities in both chambers of the state legislature. Democrats are trying to gain at least 4 seats in the House and or 6 in the Senate to take back some power. The strategist and the trackers say that the key swing races exist in suburban areas of Wake and Mecklenburg County. Is there anything that gives you a sense yet at this point of what issues may sway those voters? Economy, guns, Me Too, something else? At this point, and it's early.
It's early. I don't know. Probably all of those things. I think at the end of the day that most voters are looking for those kitchen table issues. You know, do I have a job that I like? Do I feel optimistic about the economy? Am I satisfied with the education that my kids are getting? Do I feel like I have opportunities to move ahead? You know, some of these other issues. And again, things bubble up. I mean, you know, 3 weeks ago, we probably were not talking about gun control and that issue
we
are today.
Correct.
So, you know, a lot of things can happen. And then across North Carolina, you know, we're a diverse population regionally and, you know, where people live, how they choose to live. And so there are a lot of issues that are going to be very important, say, in Macon County that voters in Sampson County really don't care about. And then there's the urban-rural issues and all of that. So, again, I think it's going to be a very vibrant marketplace of ideas.
I don't disagree with what Becky said. I hate to keep bringing it back to Trump, though. In the elections we have seen in other states that have taken place, you know, special elections that have taken in congressional seats and in legislative seats in other states, even in the South, there's been a tremendous turnaround because of the energy that the anti-Trump vote, the fact that people are so angry and so disgusted about the performance of the President of the United States that they want to send a message. And so I think there's no way to get around the fact that Trump will continue to be a front page story throughout this election year.
And I think if Trump were running for re-election as president, you know, that would absolutely be true. You know, are you going to vote for Trump or are you not? I think that the North Carolina legislative races and our congressional races, too, to a certain extent, are what are going to be forefront. And I think voters are going to be talking about what's important to them in their communities, in their neighborhoods, not necessarily whether or not they like Trump.
First election in 12 years with a statewide political race. I'm setting judicial races aside. In 2006, last similar race of this kind, turnout was 36.5%. Primary turnout was just less than 12%. So something to keep an eye on as we head toward that May 8th primary and then those November general elections. A report out from NC Policy Watch this week, that's the organization, Rob, you work for, detailed allegations of sexual harassment against three-term House Democrat Dwayne Hall. He's accused of persistent sexual innuendo, and witnesses at two different 2016 events say that he kissed women without their consent. Democrats swiftly called for his resignation, including the governor. He's a personal friend of Hall's. As we record this on Friday morning, Hall has remained silent on the calls to step down. Becky, should Representative Hall walk away?
Well, he's certainly getting a lot of pressure from his party. If you pay attention to Twitter and these other things, again, you know, as you mentioned, the governor has asked him to step down. The chairman of the North Carolina Democratic Party has asked him to step down. And in the body in which Dwayne Hall serves, the minority leader has asked him to step down. In addition to that, there have been lots of his colleagues from his caucus who have asked him to step down. That's not for me to make that decision. That really is Representative Hall's decision to make. There's so much pressure on this. I don't know how he ignores it, to be honest with you. But that's his decision.
Yeah, I NC Policy Watch reported this story. I have to say it's been a difficult few weeks for us as this story has come together. Obviously, it wasn't something that was enjoyable for any of the Policy Watch team or for reporter Billy Ball, who did just a marvelous job. He's actually been working on this story and the whole topic of sexual harassment in state politics for, over a year. What's appropriate for me to say is that I think the story speaks for itself. I think it's been noteworthy that there's been so many quick calls for him to step down. It's up to him as to whether he should take that action or not.
You're an attorney, and I'm not trying to make a dangerous analogy here, but you're an attorney, Rob. Due process, innocent until proven guilty. Of course, the court of law and the court of public opinion are two different things. One of the things you and I and we have discussed in here is the process or the lack of process as it pertains to harassment and sexual harassment within the confines of state government, state legislature. What is the process that needs to take place here? Does Dwayne Hall, should he get a trial before, you know, stepping
away?
Well,
that's up to him. I think there should be I think there will be more stories coming out from NC Policy Watch in the days and weeks ahead about the lack of, you've written about this and reported on it yourself, that we really don't have a visible, viable process for people to come forward to tell their stories in what they feel is a safe place, people who've been victimized, a place where they'll be listened to that isn't politicized, where there are independent, nonpartisan people who are impaneled to hear the complaints and indeed to hear from the people who are accused of improper behavior. If nothing else comes of this story, I hope very much that that does result. There are other states that have done this. We hope to write about that in the coming days. And so that's something I very much hope will come out of this saga.
Let me just say kudos to Rob and his organization for the reporting on this. And to Rob's point, you know, where do you go when something like this happens? I mean, these incidences that they have reported on with Representative Hall did not occur in the General Assembly building. You know, they were outside of the building. I think there were references to perhaps some employment in his legislative office.
There was. We did have one source who appears in the original story who is employed at the General Assembly who reported the fact that there were persistent sexual overtures that were made in the building as well. But the two incidents that are really detailed in great specificity and indeed in which there are named sources did take place outside.
Right. So, you know, what do you do about that? If there is something that occurs at your workplace or within the walls of the General Assembly, there may not be as good a process as we'd like, but they are addressing it, and I think those will be put into place. You know, here's the question. I mean, both of you all have written extensively on this, and I think that this is the value of the kind of organizations, and I would say, in my case, Carolina Journal, that, you know, perhaps these kind of news mediums do offer a safe place, an alternative for people to go if they're just, you know, where else do you go? I mean, do you go to the police and say, somebody tried to kiss me and I didn't like it? I mean, you know, there's those kind of barriers to people to feel like they can talk about it. And so, Rob, I think what you have provided in this, and Jeff, previous reporting that you have done, is a very valuable service, is news media outlets like WUNC, like Policy Watch, like Carolina Journal, is this a safe place for people to go?
The only other point I'll add is that the General Assembly is a very politicized environment, even for the staff, the people who work as aides to legislators. They're loyal to their party, they're loyal to their lawmakers, and there's almost a team element there. And so if it's hard, there needs to be a process that is explicitly nonpartisan. For instance, if there were a Democratic staffer in a legislature that was Republican controlled, that would have to go to a Republican speaker's office to complain. That's complicated stuff. It brings in a lot of issues beyond just the incident itself and how it will be treated. And that's a very competitive, high tension area that the General Assembly is. And so I just think we need to keep that in mind as well. It's another reason why it really would be good to have a very clearly nonpartisan, independent place to go to lodge these kinds of complaints, where people don't have to worry about it being the result being colored by politics at all.
This is a curious follow-up from me as a reporter, 100% throwing you on a spot, on the spot, and most likely a question that's only going to live on our website. I don't know if that makes a huge difference or not. One of the undertones to me in this piece was alcohol. Was that a factor? Was Representative Hall drunk when these incidents took place? And I don't even know if that matters.
Yeah.
But what role did alcohol play?
I'm not sure we reported that in the story.
Okay.
These were gala events late at night in which I'm sure alcohol was available and was being consumed by somebody.
I'm sure
it plays a role in these kinds of events. I can't really speak to whether Representative Hall was drunk, but had a drink at all. I really don't know.
Fair enough. Just a skosh of curiosity. Yeah.
In my mind, that's no excuse for kind of behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
Unrelated, on a lighter note to get us out of here. Well, not light, but light maybe. Billy Graham is being laid to rest today. State leaders have started the process of having a statue of him added to the U.S. Capitol, at the U.S. Capitol. Each state gets two statues. People have to be deceased in order to have these statues. If you could play God or play something else and choose, which two North Carolinians would have their busts up?
Who's our other one
in
right
Washington?
Now? I don't even remember.
Adcock, Governor, former, is it Adcock?
Acock,
thank you, is coming out. I honestly don't know who the other one is off the top of my head. If you could have anybody in the spectrum of anybody.
Wow.
Throwing you on the spot just like I did last week, right?
I like the idea of Billy Graham for one.
Okay.
That would be one of my picks. You know, when we talked last week, I mentioned Bill Friday as a real North Carolina institution.
Yeah, I think Friday's great. I mean, the only concern I would raise about Reverend Graham is that this is, when we start mixing religion and politics, it's a very complex area. And when we pick someone from one particular faith to represent all people in a diverse state that is, and in a government that is supposed to be explicitly non-sectarian, I think for some people it raises a few hackles that they may admire Graham. They think he was a wonderful fellow, but it does, I think, for some people raise a few issues when if it were a representative of any other religion that were put up as the representative of all North Carolinians. I think it might cause some people to feel a little uncomfortable.
Seems to me like we should have a musician, and I don't know who that would be, or a race car driver. Something that's just, quintessential North Carolina.
Junior Johnson or Richard Petty.
I think it would be good also to think about the fact that traditionally when we do these kinds of statues, that people of color, people who in many respects built this state, often under the worst of conditions, are rarely represented. We tend to gravitate the white men. And at a minimum, I would hope we would have a serious conversation about the fact that it would be good to represent some of the people who aren't traditionally represented in these kinds of statues.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch, Becky Gray's senior vice president with the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks,
you
John.
Too.